in Navabraja Mahima and just writing about Varshana and hearing about Varshana, and then I came upon the pastime written earlier in the Pariyaham about Pilipukur, and I'm just going to read that right now. One day, the great Durvasa visited King Vrishabhanu's house, where the sage was nicely cared for by Sri Radha. In return for her pure service, he gave her the blessing that whatever she cooked would taste like nectar and make whoever ate it immune to disease and danger. Mother Yashoda, when she heard of Radha's newly acquired opulence, naturally desired her son to be a beneficiary of Radha's cooking. And so it came to pass that even as an unmarried girl, Vrishabhanu Nandini would come daily to cook Govinda's morning meal. Radhika would leave Varshana after sunrise and, accompanied by her young girlfriends, walk to Nandagram to cook under the supervision of Mother Rohini. Who can describe the love of Rohini and Yashoda for Sri Radha? They thought it was by her cooking that Krishna and Balaram enjoyed good health and unending victory over demons. Of the two mothers, Yashoda Devi is the supreme emblem of maternal love. No one within the 14 worlds possesses even an atomic fraction of her affection for Sri Krishna. And yet, although her heart is always overflowing with love for her son, she loves Balaram and Radhika no less than Krishna. Every day, Yashoda reminded Balaram to protect Krishna from demons. Every day, she reminded Radha that Kanai would make a most suitable husband. This was the heart's desire of the Queen of Braj, to bring Radhika into her home as her beloved daughter-in-law. Of course, the marriage of Radha and Krishna is not possible in Vrindavan. The mood of the milkmaids is that Hari is their coveted paramour. This bhava is an eternal feature of his transcendental pastimes. Unwedded love, known as Parakya bhava, is most pleasing to Nandana. Such forbidden love, which offers the widest varieties of mellows, is kept ever fresh by the obstacles posed in meeting others' wives. Tricked by maternal affection, Yashoda is unaware of the course of the gopi's love. The compass of her heart is prema, and its direction is the welfare of her son. She knows nothing else. Driven by such a mood, Rajeshwari can think of no better match for Krishna than Kirtida's lovely daughter. With this goal in mind, she devises various plans. She thinks, whose beauty, other than Gaurangi's, matches the beauty of my Kalachandra? Who else, other than Gunavati Radha, possesses qualities that complement my son's every virtue? If there is another perfect match for my son, I have not seen her in Vrindavan. May the gods fulfill the desire of this unfortunate soul. Let Radha and Krishna's marriage ornament my family tree. One morning, Yashoda thought to propose the match of Radha and Krishna to the Queen of Varshana. While Radhika was preparing to go home, Yashoda held her hand and said, Radhe, you are now of marriageable age. I know no one more suited for you than my son. Our families should meet to discuss this idea. Yashoda Devi sat on a jeweled dais. As she drew Radhika to her side, she felt Radha's butter-soft body melt into hers. By Radha's touch, Mother Yashoda felt unlimited ecstasy. She thought, is this girl the goddess of fortune? Is she a Devi descended from Svarga? By her mere touch, I feel transported to Vaikuntha. Taking Radha's small hands in hers, Mother Yashoda gazed at the auspicious signs on her palms. With tears in her eyes, she reached for a tray of turmeric and gently wiped Sri Radhika's pinkish palms until they were colored yellow. Radhe, do you know what this means? Puzzled, Radhika shook her head, her golden earrings jingling. No, mother. Why did you put haldi on my palms? Yashoda Devi stroked Radhika's soft hair as she looked into her beautiful face. She felt as if she had fallen into a great ocean of beauty and was unable to reply until she managed to swim to its nearest shore. Priye, when a young girl's palms are painted with haldi, it means she is engaged to be married. What do you think of that? Radhika looked at her palms with her doe-like eyes. I do not know what my mother will say, but I like to wander here and there at will. If I'm engaged, then my freedom will certainly be checked. Yashoda replied, Your mother is wise and magnanimous. Let her heart guide her. But you are blossoming in the sunlight of youth. You must therefore expect the responsibilities that accompany womanhood. You cannot play in the dust forever. Radhika glanced at her feet submissively and said, Mother, your every word is my order. Yashoda Devi embraced her again. Affectionately smelling Radha's forehead, she said, Then go to your home and let me know what your mother decides. Touching her feet, Gauri left the palace, her ankle bells jingling like cooing swans. As she departed, Yashoda watched her float down the winding stairs and thought, When this girl matures, the demigods will be amazed at the sight of her. In wonder, they will fall from the heavens like rain. In the shelter of the forest surrounding Barshana, Radhika stopped to ponder her fate. She turned to Lalita and said, What is to be done now? The ropes of Mother Yashoda's love are exceedingly strong. How will I untie myself from this predicament? Tangavidya replied, Sakhi, you have certainly been drawn into a delicate situation. Lalita said, But it is easily remedied. Why should we be concerned? Vishaka interjected, Radhe, we're too young to be married. Should we marry, freedom will be finished, our movements being severely curtailed. Lalita, quick, find a solution to this problem. Lalita smiled, Radhe, why are you so alarmed? Have your hands been painted by indelible dye? Merely wash off the haldi, and your cares will dissolve in a trice. Then, Mother Yashoda will have to find another way to realize her desires. Clapping her hands and pointing to the right, Vishaka said, Sakhi, there's a nice lake. Quickly wash your hands and let us return home on the path Govinda takes with his cows. The nearby pond Radha walked towards was decorated with many lotus flowers and resounded with the songs of birds and humming bees. Numerous trees surrounded the lake, their branches weighed down with ripe fruit, the pollen of their flowers falling upon its crystalline waters. At each of its four sides, beautiful bathing ghats led into the water. Upon its banks, deer and waterfowl played. This spot was much favored by Srihari, whose cows drank its sweet water before leaving for the pastures of Braj. Sri Radha strolled to the shore like the princess of swans. Raising her skirt, she stepped ankle-deep into the lake. Careful, do not slip, warned Lalita. Sudevi laughed naughtily. Then we will really have a story to tell. Radhika cast a bluish glance at her merry friends as their giggling echoed across the waters. When Radha leant forward to wash her hands, she saw her own reflection in the lake. Amazed by her own unlimited beauty, she paused momentarily to behold it. Wouldn't it be nice to always be in Gopal's company, she thought. Then I would never have to be separated from him. As she rubbed her hands together, the haldi dissolved into the water and spread out in golden circular waves. Absorbed in thoughts of Hari, while gazing into the blue waters of the lake, Radha gently washed the turmeric from her hands. Bewildered by remembering Sri Krishna, Radhika did not notice that her hands were clean. In her trance of love, she continued to rub her hands mechanically, like a washerwoman cleaning cloth, or a housewife grinding paste. Gaurangi rubbed and rubbed, while her friends marveled at the ever-new expressions of love on her heart revealed. Finally, Chitra giggled, Radhe, look what you've done. The whole lake has turned yellow. I think you've washed your heart as well as your hands. Quick, let us leave before someone comes. Radhika stared wide-eyed at the entire lake, which had become golden. It was not only the haldi, but Radha's own bhava that had tinted the pond yellow. What will they say? Cried the gopis echo. Radha stepped out of the water and quickly came to her friends. Lalita said, Radhike, I think that haldi was the river of your heart's affection overflowing its banks. Better you control yourself before you paint all of Vrindavan yellow. Sri Radha rowed her head in embarrassment and said, I'm not the only golden complexion gopi in Braj. Lalita happily replied, That may be true, but we became golden by prolonged contact with you. Anyway, let us leave this place before someone accuses us of overriding the Creator's will. Placing Radhika in front, the young gopis hurried off in the direction of Barshana. They appeared like a group of colorful clouds, with their golden complexions like flashing lightning, their uncontrolled giggling like rolling thunder, and their prema for Krishna like a rain shower. Not long after the gopis had left, Sri Krishna appeared at that very spot. Intently looking for a stray cow, he did not notice any change in the scenery. Entering the forest, Gopal continued his search until he had passed the lake. Suddenly, he thought he noticed something different about the place he had just passed. He stopped to think for a moment and then carefully retraced his steps. When he returned to the clearing, Govinda looked to the left and to the right and then to the left again. What is different about this place, he thought. Then his eyes caught sight of the lake. Startled, he whispered, "That pool has turned yellow. It appears as if the water has been dyed a golden color. Hello, hello, what's happened here?" Gopal looked at the animals and trees, but they said nothing. Absorbed in their activities, they carried on as usual. Hari rubbed his eyes, but the water remained the same color. "I must investigate this," he thought. He walked down the steps to the water. Perhaps it was the work of some demon. Perhaps the demigods were playing tricks again. Cautiously, he looked into the pond, and obviously he saw his reflection upon its golden surface. There he was, possessed of the same turban, the same peacock feather, the same flute, the same cowherd dress, but there was one difference. His black complexion was now stained golden. "I look like a Gaura Krishna," he thought. "How is that?" The birds, deer, trees, and flowers all turned to watch as Krishna reached out to touch his reflection. Suddenly, Hari felt a surge of ecstasy run through his body. It was as if a bolt of lightning had struck him. He drew back and cried, "Vishnu, Vishnu, what is that?" "What is this mystical yellow substance?" he asked. The forest would not respond, only his echo, yellow substance, returned his question. Sri Krishna's curiosity increased. Once again, he reached towards the water, and once again, the animals and trees craned their necks to watch. Once again, Govinda touched the water, and once again, his whole being quivered with ecstasy. As intense feelings of love surged through Sri Krishna, all 8 symptoms of sattvika bhava manifest in his body, and his mind was filled with an extraordinary loving disposition. Hari was amazed at his newfound experience. He was even more astounded by the prema coursing through his heart. He thought, "The love I'm feeling is something new and remarkable. I am no stranger to prema, but what I'm experiencing seems to have me as its object." Krishna looked across the lake while briefly pondering the situation. "Usually, I reciprocate the love of the Brijbasis. They are the object of my love. That's natural. But if I examine my heart, I find that as I touch this lake, I feel love for myself. How extraordinary." Govinda's mind raced to understand this newfound wonder. "Only the gopis possess the kamatmika bhav, I feel, and among the gopis, only Sri Radha manifests bhav in such exalted measure. The golden color of this lake is the complexion of her bhava, and the electric touch of its waters is the mood of her love. Radhika must have empowered this lake with her prema. What other explanation is there? How very wonderful! How very wonderful!" Sri Krishna's appetite for tasting Radha's love was not fully aroused. For what reason was this lake different from others? What would happen if he put his arms in it? No, better, what if he fully immersed himself? Looking left and right, he entered the water up to his calves, then his knees, then his waist, and finally up to his conch shell neck. Casting a blissful glance at the trees and animals, he smiled playfully while dipping under the surface. The golden waters happily embraced Hari's transcendental form, and for some time, he almost completely disappeared. Only Krishna's peacock feather was still visible above the water, because the lake was not that deep. As he moved here and there under water, the movements of the feather plotted the course of his marine activities. Then after some time, Govinda stopped and stayed in one place, only his protruding feather quivering in the breeze like a colorful boy marked his location. While Sri Krishna was underwater, the flowers, trees, birds, and bees held their breath in suspense. Just when they were on the verge of fainting, Krishna gradually appeared from the yellow waters in quite an unusual state. Still dressed as a cowherd, Sri Krishna's sapphire luster had faded. His complexion was completely golden. If one were to smell the gold 1,000 times, it might resemble the lustrous brilliance emanating from Gaura Hari's body. The change in Sri Krishna was not merely external. It also indicated a change in his inner disposition, his bhav. Coming onto dry land, he looked about as if he were searching for someone, as his lips constantly chanted his own names, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Looking left and right, golden-colored Krishna was absorbed in the mood, happiness, and ecstasy of Sri Radha, in a form known as Gauranga. Within his mind, he thought, Where is Sri Krishna, whose form is curved in three places? Where is the sweet song of the flute? And where is the dancing, singing, and laughing of the rasa dance? Dipping in the waters dyed by Radha's haldi and bhava caused various ecstatic emotions to evolve within Gauranga. In separation from Sri Krishna, his mind filled with anxiety and his patience tottered. In this condition, he recited the following verse. O my Lord, O friend of the helpless, you are the only ocean of mercy. Because I have not met you, my inauspicious days and nights have become unbearable. I do not know how I shall pass the time. Standing upon the jeweled ghat, golden water still dripping from his hair and clothes, Gaur searched for a glimpse of himself. He prayed to Govinda, whom he considered to be an ocean of mercy, to bestow his audience upon him, the only means by which Gauranga could be freed from anxiety. Thinking Sri Hari might be hiding in the nearby gardens, Gaur Krishna began to move with the lightsome turn of a gopi. His arms raised in divine supplication, he moved about the lakefront path, singing his own names in the sweetest possible voice. Sometimes he would look into a kunj, sometimes he would search behind a tree, sometimes he would inquire from a forest creature. At all times he was anxious to know Sri Krishna's whereabouts. Within his heart, Gauranga had forgotten his identity and conceived of himself as none other than Sri Radha. Unable to meet Sri Krishna, Gauranga's mind was restless and agitated. Taking shelter of the object of his love, he stretched his arms before him, and as the animals looked on in wonder, asked Sri Krishna for means by which to achieve him. Quote, O Krishna, O player of the flute, in these three worlds nothing excels the sweetness of your early age. You know my unsteadiness, and I know yours. No one else knows about this. O my beloved, I want to see your beautiful, attractive face somewhere in a solitary place, but how can this be accomplished? Gaur Hari was drawn to behold the beautiful features of Sri Krishna. This aspiration unhinged his mind and made him unsteady. Bewildered, he turned to the trees for direction, but they remained silent, apprehensive of his extraordinary condition. Rooted in his assorted bhavas, Gauranga appeared like a tree of contradictory ecstasies, unified by the madness of his love. Anxiety, impotence, humility, anger, impatience struggled with each other. In that condition, his body and mind despondent, he opened his heart for all to see. O my Lord, O dearest, O soul friend of the universe, O Krishna, O restless one, O only ocean of mercy, O my Lord, O my enjoyer, O beloved of my eyes, alas, when will you be visible to me again? Bathing in the water stained by Radhika's hands, Sri Krishna became bewildered by her prema and displayed the form of Gaurahari. Roaming through the lakeside gardens, he sang his own names, yearned to hear his own flute, and cried to see his own form. His mood was identical to Sri Radha's separation from him. Even Braja's creatures cried to see his pitiful condition. As the effects of a mystical potion gradually lose its influence, slowly Gaurahari remembered who he was, resumed his shamarupa, and continued to search out his stray cow. Even now, learned Vaishnavas call this lake Pilipukur, the yellow pond. Hare Krishna.